Hello and welcome back to episode 4 of the Book Wars podcast. I am Chris and I'm here with Kate and Kristen, and we're here to talk to you about our second book. We made it through one whole book and somehow, magically, and somehow at least one of you listened. So thank you very much for that.
You know who listened? Beth Rivas listened.
Yes, New York Times best-selling author Beth Rivas. Beth Jesus. Beth Rivas, New York Times bestselling author of Rebel Rising, which we discussed in episodes 1 through 3, listened to our podcast and shouted us out on Twitter. So that was a highlight.
A highlight is an understatement, I would say. I think we just screamed for
like an hour.
An extended period of time.
Figuratively, because I was at work, but.
Well, yeah, but no.
Kate was actually screaming, I think.
Possibly.
No. Maybe a little bit.
I don't mean to call you out, Kate, but that's not.
Yes, you do. Really.
Yeah, it's not really like a deviation from the norm there for you.
Yeah, that's just me.
But anyway, we're here to start our second book, which is Bloodline by Claudia Gray. And Claudia Gray, you may very well be a New York Times bestselling author. I apologize. I think she is.
Yeah, she is.
Is she? I buy it. Her books are great.
So good.
All right, we're just going to call her New York Times bestselling author Claudia Gray, and if that's wrong, then don't at me.
I bet that's what her Twitter bio says anyway.
Oh, all right. It's canon then.
It's canon? Good God.
Just to be clear, it's new canon, even though we're not allowed to say new canon anymore.
It's not expanded universe?
It's not, yes.
Okay, got it. So anyway, Bloodline, for those who are unfamiliar, came out just before Episode 7, The Force Awakens, came out in 2015 as part of the Journey to Star Wars The Force Awakens series of promotions. And it details Leia's time in the Senate. It takes place in 28 ABY, I believe, 6 years before Episode 7. And so Leia is currently a senator in the Galactic Senate.
Yeah, well, she's in her late 40s, just to like put that... I think that's right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Late 40s, which makes sense because she's about like 22, 23 during the Battle of Yavin. No, sorry, not Yavin, Battle Endor.
Yes, we knew what you meant.
23. Mm-hmm.
Before we get into the spoiler-ridden podcast, so if this is your first time joining us, just know that this is not spoiler-free, and we're also just not going to be doing a lot of discussing the plot of the books that we do. So it's a lot more analysis, but it's definitely not free of spoilers. So, but before we get into our hot garbage talking, what's everybody drinking tonight?
I am drinking an Abita Tagoza sour. It's great. It is a key lime and sea salt sour.
That's what I was drinking last week.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it's a throwback to what Kate was drinking last episode.
Yeah, so I guess that's a positive that we didn't go through the six-pack in less than a week.
Oh, God, it was only a six-pack?
I tried.
I would have gone through that, and I live alone. But it's fine. Don't at me.
It's fine.
Kate's very small.
You know.
What are you drinking, Kate?
Pea water, and by that I mean... I am drinking a mixed fusions Moscato, and the reason why I'm drinking this, which is apparently Nicki Minaj wine.
That sounds disgusting.
It's awful.
Is it good?
Well, okay, great. Like
you're just drinking it.
It's fine. It's like wine mixed with like fruit juice, and so it's only 5.5% alcohol, so I'm probably going to be drunk anyway. But the reason why I have this hot garbage is because Chris and I are super bougie, and our friends hosted a wine tasting the other week, and this is the prize we got for...
Why is that a prize?
Most popular...
Oh, God.
I know. Austin, if you're listening to this, just so you know, it tastes like I'm drinking liquid sugar.
I was gonna say, that sounds like something like 16-year-olds drink. We don't condone underage drinking.
Yeah, but, yeah, it's a Smirnoff Ice and wine.
That's what it sounds like.
Similarly, I'm going to be on a sugar high, and it's going to be a good time.
Great. Anybody want to guess what I'm drinking?
I'm going to guess a Rainier.
Nailed it.
Awesome.
It is still early here, though. I mean, you guys are more into the evening.
So, just to kind of expand on what Kristen was saying, for those who are just joining us for the beginning of our second book and missed the first few episodes, A, you should go back and listen to them, and download as well, pad our stats. Basically, we're not a review podcast. We're not going to review the book. We're not going to talk a ton about the plot. We're just going to talk about the book and where it fits into the Star Wars universe and how it kind of expands our understanding of the wider Star Wars universe as a whole. And also, as Kristen said, we are not spoiler free. This episode will handle chapters 1 through 9 of Bloodline, and we will always let you all know at the end of this podcast what we'll be talking about next week, and also on Twitter, so you can follow along and read with us and send us in questions. We'd love to hear from you.
And our Twitter handle, by the way, is @BookWarsPod, so.
Yeah, we would love for you to read with us. That said, don't feel like you can't listen to the podcast, most especially, if you haven't read Rebel Rising yet and you plan to and you don't want to spoil it for yourself. I still think probably episode 3, if you're not super sensitive to spoilers, is a good one to listen to for sure, just because you're just getting a lot of pretty fun, quirky analysis from us. And part of the reason that we're doing this podcast is to really talk about things in the broader universe, so we tend to really do that and not just stick to what's given in the books. So that's what kind of we think sets us apart from maybe some other Star Wars book podcasts.
Absolutely. And with that, let's dive in. First question I wanted to ask is basically for us to just kind of talk about the state of the New Republic versus what we see in episode 7, because obviously the New Republic is thriving is generous, I think. Definitely seems like there's some issues.
It seems like rebuilding has been successful for the most part. With the exception of some of the worlds that were already literally third worlds, I guess.
Yeah, I mean the outer the one death taxes in the Outer Rim getting shit on.
Yep. Also Ryloth. Also always the Twi'leks getting shit on, guys.
Oh,
Yeah. It's the
So
worst.
sad.
It makes me so
But yeah,
saddest.
so things on the surface seem to be doing great, and then, as is quite typical in any universe, the government is a shambles.
Yeah, I think that's right. Both of you know history better than I do, but isn't this what happened before we being the white men and the white landowners in the United States ratified our real constitution? Didn't we have like this constitution that didn't give the federal government any power? It kind of
We
seemed it
did.
kind of reminded me of that.
Oh man, nerding out. Yeah, it's very Articles
Oh,
of
that was the
Confederation,
90s.
very pre-George Washington. It's kind of interesting though, because I kind of saw Mon Mothma as kind of like a George Washington figure, because
Oh,
they talk
yeah.
in this book a lot about how Mon Mothma, for as great and charismatic a leader as she was, which we obviously see a little bit of in Star Wars Rebels on Disney XD, in Rogue One, in Return of the Jedi, when she moves us all to tears, telling us about the fate of the many Bothans.
Thanks, Chris,
Yes, had to throw that in,
for
but
shoehorning that in.
we always have a very positive view of Mon Mothma, and here you kind of have Leia being mad at her because her ability to hold the Republic together by the force of her personality kind of screwed them, because now she's gone. We don't know exactly where she is. The implication is she's alive, because I think Ransom Castierfo says at some point, Mon Mothma's gone, maybe for good. So that, you know.
They say she's ill.
Yeah, I did think that they said she was ill.
No, I couldn't remember if they had explicitly said that, but that was definitely the sense that I got. But like, she was holding everyone together by the force of her personality as this great leader, and now she's gone, and there's a power vacuum.
Yeah, it's very not to j like this is so funny because I'm making all these US history references and I am the worst at history. It's very Adams administration. It's just like
Totally.
a hot disaster after
Absolutely.
like real leadership, so.
God, it is.
Very apt comparison.
It is, because it's interesting, because like I was kind of thinking about the political parties in here, the centrists and the populists, like as being different from today's Democrats and Republicans. And before you all turn it off, we're not going to get into politics. But just for historical context, it is much more similar to kind of that very early development of American parties, where like you had the Federalists who were very like pro-government and like kind of okay with a dictator, and you know, very, you know, had imperial aspirations. And then you had Jefferson's Democratic Republicans, who were like agrarian and everybody just take care of yourself, and like obviously the roots of today's like Libertarian and Republican parties. And you really see that as like the populists being the heirs to like Thomas Jefferson, and the centrists being the heirs to John Adams and Alexander Hamilton. Shout out to Lin-Manuel Miranda.
I know, I was gonna say the only reason I know that is because of Hamilton, so don't worry. It's not like I'm a real history person. Please don't at me with history questions.
What I found really interesting about this book is that previously in Star Wars you've never really gotten a sense of how their government worked, you know, when there was a real democratic government. Which was always something I was really sad about with Padme's character getting totally railroaded, because like we were saying last episode, she really represented a new model of hero. She was a politician, and I thought it was so fascinating actually getting into the politics, and there were definitely ways for them to have made that more exciting, but also explain a little bit more how the Senate worked and things like that, and they didn't, and it was upset, so I'm glad we're getting that here, honestly, because that's part of the joy of Star Wars, is the world building and how it's different from and very eerily similar to our own.
And just to build off of that, I thought it was really interesting the way that Claudia Gray chose to actually give us some more information, at least like information that, you know, we can kind of count as her opinion and her assumptions about how the Senate worked, you know, in the old days. I actually really liked how like it was kind of like the negative space in a painting, right? Where like I'm learning more about how things used to work that are just kind of like reinforced by her contrasting them with how things work now, which I kind of liked. I was like, this is fan service without being horrible fan service.
Oh yeah, totally. That's a great way to put it.
Unless it was just fan service, I don't know how to distinguish real fan service from horrible. I don't know. Whatever. You guys know what I mean.
What I really loved is this, like, really kind of real and gritty sense of the Galactic Civil War being in the past. Like, you have, you know, these kids, like, Ransom Casterfo, who we mentioned before, who's kind of Leia's main centrist foil so far. And the centrists, you know, a lot of them are young, and a lot of them didn't fight in the rebellion and don't remember it. And you have Leia kind of bringing them back, being like, all y'all who want to play hero, like, this sucked. A lot of people died. Like, we did what needed to be done. And also, Casterfo brings up the fact that, as we mentioned, Saw Gerrera and his partisans are definitely considered to be a terrorist group at this point in history.
I was fascinated by how Leia was almost closer to Gerrera than to Saw, that with her thoughts about the rebels' tactics. You know, I think she says, we did what needed to be done, we did what we felt was right at the time, and I was just like, oh shit, well then. That was fascinating, just bouncing off our conversations from Rebel Rising. Keeks, you were going to say something.
But yeah, so clearly all is not well in the New Republic. You know, we're not in the state of open war that presumably we're about to be in Episode 8, since Hosnian Prime, which we now know to be the capital of the New Republic and the seat of the Galactic Senate, is, you know, obviously still alive as a planet at this point. Yeah, hasn't been destroyed by Starkiller Base yet, but clearly things are not going well. One other thing on just kind of the world building, and then we can get into some of the characters a little more. It's striking to me that at this point, clearly the public at large, or really nobody, will find out more of how far into their existence they are, but nobody really knows about the First Order yet. And this is only 6 years before The Force Awakens, so that's a pretty quick rise by the First Order, or they just did a really good job of being secret.
Yeah, I mean, you've read this, so I feel like you know more than I do, but I'm like hoping that we'll get to it
Yes.
or something in the book. And you don't have
Same.
to tell me whether or not they do, but I'm like, oh no, Chris is saying that it's a really quick rise. I'm like, no, I thought we were gonna get to hear more about it. But it's okay. You don't spoil it for me or Kate, because this pod is
I
not
won't.
spoil. This pod is only spoiler free, and so far that we don't talk about things that we haven't read yet. How about that?
Right. Fair. I won't spoil anything coming up in the book. What I will say is it kind of explains a little more, like one of the major, not criticisms, but annoyances people had with Force Awakens was like, why is there a resistance? Why isn't it just the Re New Republic? Like, why is there this like different like branch of like whatever that like isn't sanctioned but is sanctioned? It's like a very weird political situation happening in Force Awakens. And it makes a little bit more sense here because, like, obviously, at this point, regardless of where they are in their development, nobody knows about the First Order yet. They're not known as a thing. And so 6 years is, in the grand scheme of things, in galactic politics, not that long a time. And so you can definitely see how, depending on at what point the First Order came into existence, or at least people knew about them as being out in the open, there would definitely be probably be some people that are like, we don't know who they are. We don't know what their intentions are. We're not going to declare war on them as a republic yet.
Besides the fact that the Senate just doesn't do shit, so.
Yes, that too. And so you do kind of get a sense of why the resistance is necessary as an unofficial body supported by a lot of senators, but not officially supported by the New Republic.
Oh, I remember what I was gonna say. I was just gonna say it made me to just to return back to a point that has totally passed that we don't need to talk about again. It makes me worried about when like kids who did not experience 9/11 or like have only known us to have been in the Iraq War, are like of political age to run for political party, you know, appointments, whatever. What that will be like.
Oh God, what a horrifying thought.
I know.
Jesus.
Don't worry, we're
I'm
all gonna
like,
be dead
oh
by then
no, am
anyway.
I gonna be like on the wrong side of that? Like, am I don't know.
God.
I don't know.
Jeez.
Anyway, sorry. I just need to.
No, that's a great point. I mean, I do enough screaming because my boss has kids who were born after 9/11, and I'm like, what are these tiny baby children? Why
I
do you
know. And they're
exist?
like not tiny babies anymore.
I
It's like
know,
part
I
of
know.
it.
I know,
It's
that's
like,
going to high school
ugh,
now, but.
we're so old.
So, that's terrifying. Anyway.
Anyway, sorry, that was that. Let me just bring the Star Wars conversation to a screeching halt.
Just talk about how old we are.
Basically.
Yeah, I was gonna say this is just so all of our listeners know, this is 100% also feelings podcast, both about Star Wars and not about Star Wars, so you can get over it.
Tag it feelings on iTunes. That'd be great. We get so many listens.
Speaking of old people,
That
oh
was a good
God, I'm
one.
sorry, Carrie Fisher, may you rest in peace. Anyway.
So anyway, let's talk about Leia, because obviously she's the main character. She's on the damn cover. It's a big part of it. And we see a Leia that's kind of different from anybody that we've like know anybody that we've known about before. This is kind of bridges who she is between Return of the Jedi and Force Awakens, but it's not really a Leia that we've seen before in this capacity of senator and statesman.
Yeah, I guess to ask a question that I don't know, it's not like you guys are gonna say no, but do we still like her? Do you like who she is?
Oh, I do. I like her more.
I think I like her more too. I just put a big that was a big fastball down the middle for you guys. Yes, we still like her.
Absolutely. I mean, she's only in her like what do we say, late
Late
40s at this point?
40s, I think.
Late 40s, yeah.
But still, she's at this point in her life where she's definitely gonna be that old lady who sits on her porch with a shotgun telling kids to get off her fucking lawn. And I was like born like that, and so I'm just like, yes.
I mean, to be fair, so is she.
Yes, that's accurate. That's very accurate. I love it.
Some of my favorite, and this is just totally bringing up a point from later in the book, but one of my favorite things is when her and What's his Castarfo?
Castarfo, yeah.
Castarfo, sure. when she reminds him that when she was in the Senate for the first time, and like dealing with all of like the stuff with all the stuff with Alderaan getting blown up by her dad, daddy problems. She was no older than the kiddos that they had with them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh no. Also, what an awkward thing for those kids.
Like, oh my god.
My goodness.
Mom and dad, stop fighting.
Mom, I really enjoyed the bit where they were like, maybe they won't remember we're here. And I'm like, Leia knows you're here. Oh, there she is. She called you out.
Mom and dad isn't fair. It's like mom and like snot-nosed little uncle.
Yep.
Because Castarfo is obviously about 20 years younger than Leia. Almost.
Did you guys like him more after he saved her and ruined the mission, or no?
I liked him more after their conversation when he was watching the Hollow of Leia killing Jabba the Hutt.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of like seeing that side of him that he's an ideologue, and he's still a little bit of a nut, I think. Whether you think he's a right nut or like a correct nut or an incorrect nut, he's a little bit of a nut. But you see that he is at least willing to like see other points of view and not just like be like, I don't care about this. Like, he's able to see like, oh, you're not who I thought you were. You're actually kind of badass.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the fact that at least in terms of this, and maybe later in the book too, I'm not really sure because I haven't read it yet, that Leia's almost kind of an unreliable narrator. You know, you're seeing a lot of this book through her eyes, and you're taking at her word her assumptions about Castarfo's intentions and his personality and all of this. And then once you get to the point where they're having this conversation, you kind of have to think back to their previous interactions, especially when she was in his office and he's got all this Empire paraphernalia.
God, that made me so mad too, though.
Oh god, yeah, no, I like busted a nut, but
okay, that's not what that means. Sorry, keep going.
I think we just found the title for this episode.
Okay, busted a nut.
You were talking about how Leia is an unreliable narrator,
yeah,
and how she got
right.
so mad in Castarfo's office.
But yeah, you know, you kind of really do want to take Leia. You want to take Leia at her word because obviously, like, she's the hero and at this
Space
point
Mom.
Such a part of pop culture. And if you know, she was my childhood hero and things like that. But I just think it was fascinating what Claudia Gray did with her character and in doing that with her interactions with Castarfo. It was fascinating.
Yeah, it was about halfway through, or a third of the way through what we read, where we get, like, another narrator, right? So, when I first started it, I assumed the whole thing would be, like, kind of from Leia's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I think the first one...
Oh, it's Joff.
It's Joff, right?
Yeah.
For those listening, Joff C. Stryker, Leia's, bodyguard isn't right, but military escort, let's say.
Escort, yeah.
Yeah. You should add the word military in there, Kate.
Couple Freudian slips happening right now.
Oh, there's so much happening.
But when he... And I thought that that was an interesting way... I liked that choice as an author to kind of ease us into this idea that it wasn't going to be Leia with somebody like him, because he's definitely, obviously, more neutral. And we haven't heard her opinion on him. Which I think, like, when we start getting to folks that we've heard Leia's opinion on, then it obviously becomes clear that she's a little bit more of an unreliable narrator. So I just kind of liked how Gray kind of snuck that in there in a way. I thought that was a really nice literary choice, and I thought she did it really skillfully. I enjoyed it.
Plus, he's a sweet baby cinnamon roll.
Yeah, he really is. One thing I enjoyed is that, like, to me, this book and, like, the fact that it's unabashedly from Leia's point of view, yeah, it doesn't make her the most reliable narrator, but it is, like, it's kind of like the view of her that we never got in the movies, because, like, I mean, I feel like it's pretty well accepted that Leia is criminally underused in a lot of the movies. Like, We always know what Luke's thinking because A, he's George Lucas's favorite main character, and B, he's like kind of a whiny baby and just like tells you exactly what's on his mind. And we always know what Han's thinking because Han doesn't really have anything else going on in his head besides what he says. But like Leia's always the person who's calculating, and you can see that she's thinking about things, and you can see that she has opinions that she's not able to share, which is, I'm sure, a feeling that many women would be familiar with.
I mean, first of all, props to Carrie Fisher's performance, and I'm not going to be able to say that enough while we're talking about this book. Oh, who knows? It's gone.
Oh, who remembers?
What is what's Luke's Myers-Briggs? I can't tell whether or not he's an extrovert or an introvert. He's an extrovert, right?
He's definitely an extrovert.
Okay, so he's like we're gonna get to
the shitty Luke Skywalker book at some point.
I can't wait. I know we'll talk about it more, but
I'm so dedicated to this podcast that I'll reread it. I really don't want to. It's bad.
Is he an ENFP or is he a J?
I don't know what they do. I know what I am.
I think he's he's definitely a P because the Force.
He is. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry, just had to get that out of the way, just because nobody ever talks about... I love how little we talked about Luke in the last three episodes, so sorry to bring that
I mean,
down.
Why would we have, to be fair? Doesn't really cross paths at all. But, like, you do get this view of, like, this is Leia's story in a way that our view of the Galactic Civil War really isn't Leia's story, because we don't hear from her. Like, and it's just very interesting to see all these things from her point of view, to know that she really is a little bit more radical than we got a sense of in the movies when she says Saw Gerrera and, you know, we, including Saw Gerrera and the Partisans, did what needed to be done. And we did what we thought was right at the time. And you're like thinking back to like all these people dying and being very aware of the gravity of what her role has been. And I don't know, that sense of gravitas is something that obviously, like, I think Carrie Fisher really brought to Leia, and something that I think a lot of fans have had this vision of in her character, but was really made explicit in a way that has never happened before.
Yeah, I think that was probably my favorite part of the beginning of this book, is just, you know, obviously we have the on-screen version of Leia that we all know and love really well, especially in episode 4, and she brings a lot of that up, which I think is really interesting, because we have this, like, you know, sassy is not quite the word, but just like, you know, she's sharp as a whip, and she's a really, like, tactful wit, and she's not taking no shit from anybody. But then we, like, hear about her hashtag big feelings in the book, and I'm like, yeah, that is obviously true. Like, you can be badass in the moment and then still have to deal with the repercussions of, like, all of the stuff that happened to you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Just to touch a little bit on our next point, it's very... One thing that always bothers me, and I think I mentioned this before in a previous episode too, is that her trauma really never gets its due. Again, we hear all about it from Luke's point of view, him losing the only family he's ever known, obviously, in episode 4, and then he gets his arm cut off and all this terrible stuff happens to him, but Leia lost her whole fucking planet, and we never, like, get that time for her to, like, process that and have feelings about that, or about getting tortured, or, you know, it's just the emotional loss of having a Han frozen in carbonite and she has to go rescue this big block of carbonite and God knows if he's even still alive in there. And it's very obvious in the book that she's got some pretty serious PTSD going on, and that's never ever explored in any of the films, not even in episode 7 really very much, and I think it's really important to talk about, because we're talking about war after all.
Yeah, and she always does come across as this, you know, very strong stoic character who doesn't show emotion, and that's why she's so impressive, because that's the only way that Hollywood knows how to show strong women, is to make them be like stereotypical men. And we touched on this a little bit last episode with the strong female heroine TM, but like you see that she really is broken in many ways. Like her, like she was being held prisoner by her father, and her father destroyed her planet in front of her.
After he said he wasn't going to.
Yeah,
Yep.
with the bait and
Accurate.
switch on top of it all. And like that's fucked. Like that's screwed up, and that clearly, like, changed her in a way that she is still never recovered from because it was brought up and she loses it.
And she was like a kid when that happened, man. She was so young.
She was 19.
Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, one part of the book that I thought was really well done is when she's having that meeting with Rin Rivendai and he brings out the wine from Alderaan that she obviously hasn't had in decades because these bottles of wine are rare. Alderaan doesn't exist anymore. And she just has this really visceral flashback to, just the sights and the sounds and the smells of her planet. And it's, first of all, it's really sad. But second of all, it's just such a great and accurate portrayal of what PTSD looks like. That's absolutely what it does. It's, when people have flashbacks and things like that, that's how it is. And it's just small things like that that can just, when your senses are triggered, your memories are triggered, and you can just kind of get trapped there for a while, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we see a lot of that. I think Gray does a really good job of sort of bringing those points out. I mean, those are kind of the same overlapping things as sort of the quote unquote fan service, right? But this specific like Alderaan piece is, really specific to Leia, and I think it's supposed to paint exactly that picture that Kate was just talking about.
Yeah, and not to preview a comic book that we aren't going to read for a while too much, but the one of the Marvel miniseries that they've put together on some of the characters, there is a Princess Leia miniseries, and it basically deals with like literally like the day after the Battle of Yavin, and Leia and what she does right after the end of A New Hope, and how she deals with the trauma from the Death Star. And I don't think we're gonna be reading that anytime soon, but if people are just looking for a very quick read, definitely recommend it, and we will. It is definitely on our list to talk about at some point, so we'll you can look forward to that to a undetermined point in the future.
Yes, our ever-growing list, aka spreadsheet that Chris is putting together, it brings some life.
Yeah, maybe there's a spreadsheet. Don't worry about it. This is how we keep track of things.
It's fine.
That's how we keep this quality content coming.
Clearly. The quality you've come to know and expect. So let's talk about another aspect of Leia, and that's her relationship with Dad.
Any Leia and Han feelings.
Oh yeah, that's one of my favorite parts of this book. Basically, just the fact that you kind of get the sense in Force Awakens that like they never worked out. Obviously they had a kid, and that kid grew up, but you get the sense that Han's been like out of her life for a really long time. And here we know that that's not the case. Like they're together. They're not physically together because Han is Han and can't stay still in one place. But they're emotionally together
And Leia is
28 years
Leia and can't
after.
stay still in one place, just
Yeah.
to be fair.
That's true.
All that is accurate.
But they're still together. They are still space mom and space dad, and they still love each other.
Oh, that made me so happy. And and like you were saying, I was so happy that they didn't go with that cliche that, would have been so obvious, because they have, I don't want to say a rocky relationship. Well, the beginning of the relationship was rocky, but they have a kind of that relationship where you banter and you fight all the time. But when you're fighting all the time, are you really fighting all the time, or is that another way of saying you love each other because you're both hotheads? Or and it's just, I just felt that was really, really true to the relationship that they built over the course of the films. And I think that's one thing that the films actually did really well, was just that slow build of their relationship. Kind of a, it was a little bit of a will they won't they, but also that uncertainty that Han had in himself, like, I'm not sure if I'm good enough for her, and maybe she wants to be with Luke instead because he's a Jedi and he's super cool. Like, I just, ugh, so many feelings.
It's good that she's not with Luke. that worked.
Well, yeah, but he just, I mean, he didn't know about that because he's a big dummy.
Sorry. Incest.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's great, thanks. Jesus. Anyway.
It's another episode title. Incest, colon, it's great. Save that one for later.
But yeah, I really loved that, kind of what exactly what you were saying, Kate, where Claudia Gray really didn't take the easy way out of just making Han a deadbeat. Like, you have this flashback to, like, when Ben is first born, and, you know, Han, Leia, and Ben are just resting, and you have, like, Han saying, you know, I never saw myself as a father, but now, like, I'm looking at him, and I can't get enough.
I don't want to cut this short, but I also don't want to forget to talk about how much I like Greer and how I'm like super hyped to learn more about what I'm sure is a tragic story because Star Wars. Yeah. It's like,
I love Greer.
She's great.
Well, we have Greer. We also have a cameo from Force Awakens in Cor Sela.
Yes.
Cor is, for those who don't know, which might include Kristen, Cor is in The Force Awakens, the scene where Hosnian Prime gets destroyed, the woman of color who's on Hosnian Prime and like staring at the laser or whatever that's about to destroy the planet. That's her.
Yeah. Got it. I could have figured that out if I used my brain, but I didn't, so.
It's not that obvious, honestly.
I love how you guys are like, duh.
Oh, I mean, I told Kate.
Yeah.
Oh, it's fine.
Sorry, Keeks. Kate got a preview of some of this content.
She gets to preview all the best content because you have the best content, Chris, in your brain. It scares me.
That could have gone in a few different directions, but we're going to move on.
Sorry.
Getting weird on the podcast today.
Gonna say Wednesday. This is a weird week, and we're all having weird weeks. I think I don't mean to speak for Chris, but I know that me and Kate are. So,
but let's talk about Greer though, because Greer is another really interesting character because you get, you know, obviously we're gonna learn more about her. She's still kind of mysterious because we don't know a ton about her backstory, but we know that she was a racer. We know that she's a pilot, and we know that she like doesn't necessarily like to sit still. So you do have that Han aspect. But then you also know that she settled down and was like, this is my job, and I'm going to be fucking great at it. And you have that aspect of Leia as well, and she kind of is, like, you get this sense that she's kind of their metaphorical child, even if, obviously, Ben is their actual child, who has not made an appearance yet.
Yeah, and Greer's not the youngest one that they're around, right? She's...
No, it's... Cor is 16.
Cor is 16, and Joff is... I don't know if it specifically says, but I think Joff is around 19.
Yeah, I think he's right around that same age.
Greer is... I got the sense that Greer is older than Joff. I got the sense that Joff is very, like, Luke Skywalker, circa New Hope, and Greer is kind of, like, mid-20s.
Hmm, okay.
It's totally possible. I don't really think it matters too terribly at this point, but...
I ship it.
Oh, I don't. I really don't.
I do.
Yes, Kristen!
Of course.
Greer can do so much better.
I mean, that's fair. I mean, we don't know that much about, like, the baby pilot yet, though.
Joff's a hell of a pilot, BT-dub, so...
Yeah, he seems like he is a great pilot. I know, they're like, what is he doing down here? He should not be down here.
That was adorable.
How are you literally flying an X-Wing in a cave?
Yeah, I mean... Whatever.
This is. I ship it.
I know. Anyway. I was not that surprised, just because like we see so much good piloting in this fandom. I was like, of course he's flying an X-wave and oh god, an X-wing in a cave. It's like when the ghost was like in the cavern.
Oh
on the
yeah.
Planet I can never remember the name of.
On Geonosis.
Yeah, on Geonosis, yes.
In the season 3 episode of Star Wars Rebels, Ghosts of Geonosis.
Yes, thank you, Chris.
You're
we'll
so
put
welcome,
that in
Kristen.
The description if we remember, even though it was a total non sequitur.
But just to go back and touch on what Chris was saying about how she's kind of their metaphorical child, it's me, and I spend too much time on social media, and somebody on either Twitter or Tumblr was saying that Greer's almost kind of like the kid that Han would have preferred to have. You know, she doesn't have force powers that he doesn't understand. She loves ships.
She loves
stuff like that.
Ships. Sorry. Just the way that you said that. She loves ships.
She does.
She likes mechanical things.
Exactly. And, you know, that's all stuff that Han can super relate to, as opposed to, you know, having to ship her off to his brother-in-law with, you know, onto some random island to get her shit together or whatever.
Or who knows where, right?
Yeah,
We actually don't know where Ben is at this point.
I just thought that was kind of fascinating, the way that she kind of takes that place in their lives.
I can't wait to read more about her. I already like her the most, so.
Same.
we're gonna get a lot more about Greer. We're gonna get a lot more of Han and Leia, which is gonna be great.
Thank God Chris has already read this, so that me and Kate can stop being so thirsty.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, I think that kind of takes us through a good amount of chapters 1 through 9. Is there anything else that you all wanted to touch on in terms of how it relates back to the universe, or we can wrap up with a quick one today?
This is not really anything, but I just enjoy how we keep finding, we're kind of like choosing how much we read based on the page count, but we keep ending up in these really perfect stopping places. And I just love that the last thing that we read about is just Leia just like literally sitting there at dinner fucking face palming because she's just like, God damn it, I just want to retire and be a badass, like, can you leave me alone, please do not.
Oh yeah, how did we not talk about that? Like, it's as part of Leia's character, she's finally making the decision that she doesn't want to be this responsible character with all this gravitas who cares about the fate of the universe anymore.
Yeah, she's,
and then they just drag her back, they just do the Al Pacino, they pull her back in.
You can just tell she's tired, right?
I know, like, let mom rest, like, God.
it's like when you get that email at, like, 4:55 that's like, I need this today, and you're just like, God.
You're not getting it today.
Damn it.
That's her entire life, is just getting that email.
Yeah.
No, I was just gonna say, I love it when she tells Han that she's, like, done, and he's like, are you? And then she comes back, and she's like, no, I'm not.
I know. Oh man.
Yeah, I thought that was really funny. But yeah, I mean, is Castorfo Snoke?
And that's the end of the pod. That's it. We're done.
So anyway, we can wrap this up. Thanks for listening, as always, to episode 4 of the Book Wars podcast. Just a note on our scheduling for the foreseeable future. Now that we have finally gotten our tech problems solved, we have our podcast up and hosted, we're going to be planning on releasing an episode every Tuesday, from now until eternity. No, but, you know, if it's not going to be Tuesday, we'll probably let people know. You can expect them to be out around noon Eastern time on Tuesdays. But please do follow us on Twitter at BookWarsPod to get updates on when we release new episodes, what we're going to be reading next week, which, by the way, next episode we are going to be talking about let's call it the next quarter of Bloodline, chapter 10 through 17. So read along with us. Send us your questions about chapters 1 through 9 if you have them. We would love to hear them. We can get into them next episode, or we can answer them on Twitter. Again, at BookWarsPod, or email us, BookWarsPod@gmail.com. And by the time you hear this, we are going to be up on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. So rate, review, subscribe, make us look good, tell your friends, help spread the word about the Book Wars podcast, because we're having a blast doing it.
I was going to say, if it's kind of like, oh my God, I should not say what I'm about to say. I'm not going to. I'm just going to say, even if you don't like Star Wars, you know someone who does, so you can plug us.
This is true, although if they don't like Star Wars, how did they get this far?
God damn it, Chris.
Well, this, I feel like that's a suiting way to end this podcast. So for Kristen and Kate, I'm Chris, and we will talk to you next week.
Guys, this like wine grape juice, like whatever the fuck shit, is vile, and it didn't even get me a little bit buzzed, so
I'm snoked.